Welcome to episode 3. So excited to have you along this journey. This week's show is brought to you by our fine friends at Linden and Oak Coffee in High River, Alberta, proudly serving Rosso Coffee Roasters and a whole lot more. You'll find them in the Charles Clark Medical Center in High River with the best coffee you will find. Thank you, Linden and Oak. On this week's show, we go back into the vault, CCMA's 2017 in Saskatoon, where I had the opportunity to sit down with someone who is an icon of the Canadian country music industry and someone who I can say has become an amazing friend. The fantabulous Jason McCoy shares the next half hour with us. We're going to talk about being number one, being okay with not being number one, with reinventing yourself, with his journey to the Road Hammers, to personal growth, to the music biz, and how crazy is it is, to his coming to faith, to learning how Jesus has changed his life, to his road in being a Christian and sharing that message on the road. This was one of my favorite conversations that I just had to share with you. I know we're basically on the countdown to CCMA's 2018, but hey, we can do that too. But I'm really excited to share this conversation with Jason McCoy, and everything that he just is going to pour out of his heart is so cool. So welcome to the Jody Seeley Podcast. All right, we're hanging out behind the scenes, Canadian Country Music Awards Week with Jason McCoy. And what's your favorite thing that happens behind the scenes at the CCMAs?
Oh, I think any CCMA I've been involved with, the most interesting and candid things always happen in the hotel lobby. You know, you're getting ready to go to something or you're coming back from something, and there's all the artists, and you know each other. You know, you see each other at shows, at festivals, but you don't really have time to hang, and you don't get to meet the spouses of the artists, or at least you have, but you haven't got to spend time, or sometimes they bring their kids like I did this year. And so the cool part is spending time. We don't get a lot of that. And when you're at a festival, it's hurried and, you know, it's all genuine. It's like, hey, man, good to see you and love your new single, or hey, what are you guys working on? That kind of stuff. But it goes to a different level when you're at CCMAs. It's like, I guess it's like a college or a high school reunion. You know, you get to see everyone, but you get to spend a little more time over the weekend and catching up and learning about the other person as opposed to, hey, look at me, you know? I think that's probably, I get more out of that. It's not always evident right on the surface, but then when you come away from the weekend, you go, wow, that was really cool. Hey, did you know so-and-so's working with so-and-so? You know, that's where that came from, and you learn more.
Yeah, I love that. And I think for sometimes, and some people, the connections start to get a little bit deeper, and others don't. I think it's just like, you know, real life of outside of an industry for people is the same as it is for us in it.
Yeah, I think so. And that's the same with anything. I mean, you can work in any business. And when you get to, you know, you hang out at the Christmas party, you learn something about that person that you didn't, in a good way. I'm not talking about the Christmas. Wow, you really like vodka. No, things like that. No. But you get to have a little sideline conversations of, oh, I didn't know you were into that kind of hobby or this kind of, you know, your dad's from where and stuff like that. And that's really what you get to learn here.
And how many CCMAs have you come to?
Oh my gosh, lots of them. I guess from 1996 onward, I would say, yeah, maybe something like, or 95, something like that. It's been a lot of them. So I'm not good at math. So whatever 95 to today is, but I think I've missed one or two over the years. I think we've had shows and it just didn't work out. Or sometimes you're not on an album cycle, so you're not nominated, which is fine. But if you're not nominated and there's not a reason to go and it's way across the country and there's a show opportunity, you take that. But, and if you're not involved physically, the cool part is these days you can be involved in social media to see what's going on. And it's, you know, a lot of the things I learned as well are on social media. If you miss one event, because there's so many, you can't make them all, but you can kind of catch up through Instagram and stuff.
Yeah, which is, it's kind of surreal at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I just saw these guys. You know, it's like, yeah, how are you in my phone too? Yeah.
You're freaking me out. Yeah. Now, one of the cool things I think that you did, you hosted one of the gala events this year, and you took a moment to sort of, I think in a cool way, thank the support system that you have, but highlighted sort of the Wife of the Year Award is what you called it. But it gave you kind of a really raw moment in front of everybody thanking your wife.
Well, I was supposed to be funny about it because that's what I do. I do funny and I write trucker songs. But yeah, it was pretty emotional for me. I just my wife's been fantastic, and I met her when I was 17, and it's just been great ever since for me. For her, it's been a little challenging at times, but I think that resonates, whether it be the wife or the husband of the artist or spouse or whatever it is, the family of, it's the support system. And I mean, we really got to say that, you know, we're not changing the world here. We're making up stuff that rhymes and singing it, but it's a pretty vain industry, and it's a little dance of allowing yourself to succumb to the worldliness of it, or trying to stay out of it just enough to make it fun. And that's when you thrive, is when you don't, when you don't really jump in and believe the hype. You know, you can't do that. I've done that over the years, and that's when my wife Terrain really suffers the most. And you know, it's not real, right? That's hanging with fans and enjoying music together. If they're really into a tune and you love it and it's been a hit and everything's going great, you just take it for what it is. It's a fun song and you get to sing it, or it's a song with a message and you get to deliver that and share it. But you know, who's opening for who and whose name is bigger on the sign and stuff like that. Like, any artist here will tell you they've had that dance in their head. Like, you gotta not buy into that. And it's great, like, when you're headlining, and I've had mountains and valleys and been around this industry long enough to have those two things and to see the good and the bad in both of them.
Well, and it's the grounding part of it that I think with fans, when you watch your favorite artists and you're listening to song, you don't necessarily think about what happens outside of those pieces. I think country music as a genre, we have a fan base and a you know, that's more family kind of feel, and fans like to know that you have this great wife and these cute kids and they love that piece. But I think it's probably really hard, like you said, in the points when you're riding high and things are fantastic and you forget.
Yeah, you do. And you know, there's so much spotlight on, you know, artists and country music singers or pop singers or movie stars and all this stuff. It, you know, don't forget, it's entertainment, right? And these people and all of us have lives and families. And if you're a fan of what somebody does, it's interesting. You know, it's like, why does that guy write that kind of music? And where does that come from? Right. But I find that, and I'm not trying to shoot myself or this industry in the foot at all, because it's great. But I find that, when people say, that person's really talented, then the first thing that comes to mind in our minds as a society is, oh, well, they must sing or play an instrument, or maybe they're an actor or a poet, you know. It's like, there are so many talents, and I'm not talking about just do, you know. There's not, that guy's a great painter, and maybe it's an industrial painter, you know. Like, there's things that take skill, or that person's a really talented person with numbers, and these sort of things. But there's also the talents of the heart, right? Like, there's people who are very nurturing, and they just have that thing. Those are the talents that are under-celebrated. You know, what we have are constant spotlights on what we do, and it's great, but it's not the be-all, end-all, right? Like, that's one set of talents. It's great to be able to be in this business and do what you love, but, you know, really, I don't know how I got off on this tangent, but as you get older, I think you realize that those talents that are a little more subtle are more valuable.
Well, and I think sometimes we learn to appreciate those the hard way, usually.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I started in this business, it was all about, you know, wanting to be the biggest name and all. I remember winning my first CCMA award, Male Artist of the Year, and, you know, I'm the guy, right? And it was like, you know, it's the same old thing. Like, nobody, you know, in the industry, it's like, yeah, it's really great, and, you know, we'll get you out on some bigger tours, and the money goes up and all that, but nothing changes, like, really. And then you just have to beat what you did last time. And it's like anything else. If you're if you're selling cars, you want to have a better month than you had last year, and you might get the award for top sales that quarter, and you have to try and beat it. It's more the it's trying to challenge yourself to have some core substance, you know. And I lack that, and still lack that in a big way. But I think you find that if you do a better job of self, then the rest, it begets a better thing of what you're doing, whether that be selling cars or writing songs.
Well, and I think too, a lot of times you're going through the same thing that everybody else is going through. It's just yours is way more in the spotlight. So it becomes these interesting, like you're having the same struggle, but people are kind of watching it with you. And then you're remembering that. Like, to me, that feels a little like rare.
Yeah, I should win best artist or best actor in a public drama. I guess so. It's just, hey, it is what it is. But I mean, there's people all around. I mean, we're in this hotel in Saskatoon right now, and you know, the staff up and down here are fantastic. You know, so the guy bringing the room service, you know, after you've been up all night, you know, running around, they meet you with a smile, and you wouldn't know that they've had the worst morning of their life with the busiest hotel in town, and they still got a smile on their face, and that's, I mean, that's a talent. So they should be more celebrated and in the spotlight, I think.
Well, I feel the same way. I was waiting for the elevator, and there was this little lady down the hall, and she's the housekeeper. Yeah. And she had the door open, and she's, you know, logging somebody's dirty towels out, and she's singing. She's just singing away, and then she's like, "Well, hello, good morning." Yeah, like, she's so cute.
Isn't it great? There should be award shows for that. And I think the way we have those award shows is just by appreciating them and saying, "Hey, man, thanks for your, you know, great energy this morning," and stuff like that. Like, I used to be a bellboy when I was when I was younger. That was one of my first jobs after cutting grass and delivering newspapers. But you know, and you'd have a busy morning. It was at a ski resort hotel, and you know, you'd be in the kitchen and be buzzing like a beehive, and they're taking care of the restaurant, and then you're just trying to get in there as a, you know, teenager trying to get this plate together, and then you got to take it all the way down the other end of the hotel, and you realize you forgot the ketchup, or hey, do you guys have any jam? And so, you know, you got three other orders going. It's there's so much harder things to do than make up stuff that rhymes, you know, and we're just pretty lucky we get to do it.
Well, I wanted to chat. You talked a little bit earlier about when you've had the peaks and the valleys, and when you were male artist of the year and then not. And I think for you, I always find it, to me, like, honest to goodness, and it's not lip service, but I found it super inspiring when, you know, the Jason McCoy brand was, like, you were the guy for a long time, but then you reinvented with the Roadhammers project. Like, what is that journey really like for you? Because I can imagine it was kind of hard.
Well, you know what? The getting into the Roadhammer thing was actually pretty easy, but the catalyst to it was I just come off of winning Male Artist of the Year. So again, I was the guy, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do for this. I just came off a hit record. It was great, you know? And it's like, okay, it's time to make another record. And I'm like, I don't know what it sounds silly. What do you want to do? Well, you make a record. But I didn't know what kind of music I wanted to write. And country music was changing at the time. You know, I was more of a traditionalist, and Shania was in the mix and all this kind of stuff. And it was changing, you know, in a good way, but it was still evolving. And I just didn't know where I fit in. And so I was talking to some friends at CMT, and I said I wanted to do this concept record, kind of like the Traveling Wilburys. And they decided to make a reality show of me, you know, putting this whole thing together. And it exploded. It debuted at number one. We were on a tour bus right off the bat. And it was a sold-out tour everywhere. And that was a great, great thing. And I just – the side project of the Roadhammers became the main project. And now my solo records are the side project, right? But partway into that, we got signed to a record label in Nashville, and as the Roadhammers. And we all just left our little projects or whatever we were doing, and we went and all moved to Nashville. There are so many artists in Nashville. We had great success. We never had a radio hit in out of Nashville with that label, but we were all over the place, and we created a good fan base. And we just came back from doing a show in Wisconsin actually a couple weeks ago, and we still have fan base that we can play to. But it's something that is hard because we were into this record label in Nashville, and then they shut down, and it kind of shut us down creatively. It was really hard to take, and we all kind of left Nashville with broken hearts, not to be too dramatic about it, but and that stopped us for a little while. I did a solo record, and we kind of we didn't break up. We took a break, you know, and then we came back together with the Wheels album, and it was amazing. It was like a coal to the campfire. I always say if you take the coal away, it gets cold and black really quick. But as soon as you put a coal back on the campfire, it just glows red hot again, and that's what we had the good fortune of. And we're coming off our first single now with the album Squeeze and getting into the second single. And I mean, hey, it's not as easy as it used to be. We're one of the only country bands that were out there in Canada. And now there's so many. I mean, James Barker Band coming off of number one, 5 CCMA nominations this year. Great, great band. They're young, talented, driven guys. And the Washboard Union, just great music. And so there's two ways to take it. You know, like, oh, boy, there's all this competition. I don't know, but these, those guys, you know. Or you have to, like I said before, go inside and try to be that, try to find the substance inside that lets the rest of the world go on around you, and you do your thing, you know. So I'm the guy that naturally am worried about the guy in the other lane while I'm racing, you know. It's good. Competition is good. But it's okay to not be number one, you know. And I guess in the music industry, it's pretty evident that we need to know that. But I think we all need to know that everywhere in life, right? Like it's – you don't have to be the number one salesperson at the office, you know. And you shouldn't just not want to always improve yourself and do better. I mean, that's something about challenging yourself that allows growth. But we don't all have to be number one.
Exactly. So personal growth, why? Yeah, it's all right. You rambling is all that I need.
I ramble.
But so, okay, when it comes to that personal growth piece of that, you know, the Jason McCoy that started out in the 90s to this guy.
I haven't been able to get any of that personal growth, but I hear it's really good. I read a lot about it.
You read about a lot of other people reading about it. Well, no, I just wondered, like, what have you done to feel like that it's okay not to be number one? Because you probably didn't think that when you started.
No, I didn't. I thought anything less than top of the heap was a catastrophic failure. Always did. And that led to a lot of, you know, depression because all you're thinking about is yourself. And I still struggle with that stuff. You know, it's, I know what I aspire to, but I'm certainly not even close to getting there. But, yeah, when I was younger, it was, I put all my value, like all my value into, country music because I used to worship these country music artists. Right. And it's like Johnny Cash, he's God, you know. It was like or Willie Nelson or all these cats, and then it got into the Randy Travises and Dwight Yoakams, and I just wanted to be that thing because they were it, because everybody was talking about them. But I have been lucky enough to be number one, and I've also been lucky enough to have records that stiffed, you know, and just tanked. And the ones that tanked were better for me than the ones that were number ones, because now I'm a dad and I am a husband and I'm present, you know, when it's time to be that. And that's life, right? The other part is making up stuff that rhymes.
I don't know for you what your journey of faith looked like prior to. Is that something that came into your life as of recent? Was it always there and you didn't know? Is that a piece that's helped shift sort of this growth for you?
Well, it was. It's an ongoing thing. And so I used to have all my value in country music. And then when that didn't fill it, it turned to alcohol and drugs and all the bad stuff that comes along with that. And then all of that hurt my music career and everything imploded, you know. And this is before the Hammers. And then my wife and I became Christians out of that because of our counselors were Christians. And I had no idea about this God thing and all this stuff. I had no idea. And that has really changed everything about my life because it's taken the focus off of country music being the ultimate thing, right? And life being the ultimate thing, really. Now I know what the reality is. And where my value is in the whole thing. You know, I'm not the world doesn't revolve around me, you know? And the world goes around me. And I'm like a stone in the river, and it's like, we have no problem going around you, pal. And that's easy to say, you know, and it sounds like I've got it all together. Like, oh, yeah, I know what's shaking now. I'm all good. Not even close. I mean, it's still just a train wreck every day and, you know, barely dress myself and try not to drool in public. Okay, that's about it. But it is, it's just the bigger picture. You're not, if you don't have success in the world of country music, life's not over, you know? And like I said, the failures I've had have been better for me than the successes, because they've let me know that you're still alive. You're still okay, right? You know? And that's been a good thing. That's been the best thing.
And what was it like for you? Because then you, through that, you teamed up with World Vision and a bunch of different projects to take that out and share that message a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think as a Christian as well, sometimes it's easy to share that message, and other times you feel really out of your comfort zone to share. Like, what is that, adding that element into your life, been like?
Well, it's uncomfortable at first, and the more you share it, the better you become at it. And I was challenged recently by World Vision to actually, like, I mean, there's tons of World Vision artists that aren't necessarily Christians per se, but want to do good. And everybody's journey is different. I mean, I have no right to say somebody's a Christian or they're not, because we don't judge their heart. God does that. But I was actually did a tour where I went out and shared that, the real faith, and very unnerving, but more rewarding than just going out and singing a bunch of tunes. You know, it was really great. Don't get me wrong. I like just going out and cranking up amps and singing a bunch of country songs, and yeah, that's great too. So, it was more rewarding because there was a goal. Yeah, I'd say there was more substance.
Well, and I thought it was really cool. I was able to catch one of the shows. I think you called it the Perfect Gift tour, and you had that same, like, the crazy you energy that I don't know where that comes out of, but if you could sell it in a bottle, that I'd like a little bit. But it had that piece, but then you had this really cool guy with you, and he was helping to, you know, just sort of plant some seeds. And then you shared a bit of your faith story, and it still had that great energy. And I thought it was such a cool show.
Well, thank you very much. It was, Eric Samuel Tim is the fellow. He's a pastor out of the U.S., and he paints these pictures while he's doing this speech and talking about stuff and where your journey goes. And it was probably more challenging. It challenged me more than it even maybe challenged people in the audience who were, you know, questioning what was going on, because I'm not a preacher. I'm not a biblical scholar or any of that stuff. And
A theologian,
yes, of course. Welcome to Willie and the Theologians. The worst church band ever. Willie and the Theologians. All right. But the thing about it was, I guess it, you know, if you're telling somebody your story, that's good, because nobody, you can't be questioned on your story. It's just the reality. That's what I tried to do, and it wasn't a preaching thing. So, I don't know. Hey, what was the question?
Yeah. Well, no, and I loved the fact that you kept humor with it. It's something I relate to, and I think it makes it easier for people to digest, because you don't know in the audience in that case where everybody is in their own journey. So you're talking to people who, you know, freak out at the thought of you saying the word Jesus, and then you've got people who are totally at that same place, and every element in between. So it just dynamically becomes this really cool like movement, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Well, the humor part really helps, because when I was doing it, the World Vision people were like, you know, it really helps disarm people or disarm the situation and let people know this is just candid stuff. And it's not just for the audience, it's for me too, right? Because you're kind of getting personal and it feels weird, and, you know, it's like, it's great. And humor is something that it's been a gift to me and born out of a lot of pain, because and self-inflicted pain, I should say, because I used to go on stage and I tried to be this cool guy all the time. And I never talked to the audience. I was always, you know, hey, I'm a big star. And you know, the monitors would squeal and there'd be a problem with the guitar. I'd break a string and I'd get mad at that stuff. I would get off the stage and kick a box, you know, because I was mad. Oh, I broke a string. I look like an idiot, you know. And I don't know where it was along the line. I got a little more comfortable with myself doing some theater tours. And I'd talk to the audience and I'd break a string. And I wouldn't try to act like somebody I wanted to be. I'd just act like myself a little more and I'd make fun of it. And it was like, oh, the whole room just like relaxed. And like, we're having fun. This is really weird. I'm at a concert and I'm having fun. I'm singing songs and enjoying it. And it was a whole new world for me. I mean, it sounds silly, but I wasn't trying to be a thing that I thought I was supposed to see on a screen. I was just being me. And I was always the guy who I'd, you know, try and be cool guy on stage. And then I get on the bus with the band, I'd be telling jokes and being goofy. And I was like, and then as soon as I got off the bus, it was, I had to put this other face on. I was like, that's silly. And that same way, if you're going to work in an office building, you know, like you just be yourself. Right. And life's a lot easier, but then I always fall into the trap where I try to be something I'm not. And then it implodes and I have to go back to being me. So every morning I wake up in the mirror or wake up and look in the mirror. I'm like, oh, you again, but let's try and get through it.
You look a little older than yesterday. How can we fix that?
Yeah. The mornings you wake up and you go, you handsome son of a... Yeah.
you're going to own this today. Yeah.
Right. Oh, no. You're still dreaming. Wake up.
But wouldn't that be great? No, that's awesome. No, I love that. And I love that you've just... I love the change I've seen over the years. Like, I know you better now than I used to, but being a former radio gal... The Jason McCoy you would interview, you know, years ago to the guy you have conversations with now is fantastically cool. So I've loved watching that piece and I appreciate you sharing some of that story.
See, that's better for me to hear than like, oh, I really love your new single. Like, I mean, I love to hear that somebody digs the song. You know, it's great because it's something you did and you're all high-fiving each other in the studio. It's like, oh, I wonder if anybody else will like this. It's great to hear those things. We all want that. Like, hey, I built this deck. Hey, great job. How did you do that? You know, any of those things, it feels good, right? But any personal growth, I any comments on other people seeing those things mean more to me because it's come at the expense of a lot of patience of my family. And so that price has been pretty high. So it's good. It's better for me.
Well, and you know, not to seem like I'm super creepy now, but you see it in your face. Like you see it in your demeanor. You see it. Or I do, and maybe I'm just a weirdo like that, but it's just like your eyes, your face, the way you light up when you talk about those pieces is a totally different experience than before. And I love it. And I'm proud of it. And it's very inspiring again, without sounding like lip service, but it really is.
Yeah. That's definitely not me. That's obviously Christ in me. If there's any glimpse of that and obviously the, patience, yeah, he's good. Yeah. Jesus is good for your skin. So Jesus is good for your skin. Yeah, that's right. Healthcare from within. Oh man, we could.
I like that.
It's just, you know, I've always said that, you know, the number one problem with Christianity is Christians because I just hated it. And being fairly new to the Christian world, it's like, it's true that people have been hurt by Christians so deeply, and maybe not obviously, but those little wee things where Christians who are just people, that's the reason we're a problem, is because unintentionally and unaware you can hurt people. And if they're really seeking something in their life, it's like, and they're trying to get close to this thing, it's like, well, they have Christ in their life, so what's that mean? What's this whole Jesus thing, you know? And then you act like a jerk or just unintentionally just kind of for some reason hurt them. That hurts more than any overt hurt. And I've been hurt by Christians many times, and you got to realize they don't really mean it. And what we've seen in the public eye, the Jimmy Swaggerts and the whatever, all the pastors who've had these mega churches, and, you know, Jesus never had a, you know, a worship team and lights and PA system and a, you know, come on, it's all great. That's one thing, but that's not the real deal.
Maybe I should have the If Jesus Had a Podcast. Well, what would it be?
whatever he'd want it to be. Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't that be if Jesus had a podcast? Oh, man.
It's going to be the next episode. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm in. Yeah.
We could find some stories for that. I really feel like we could. It would be fantastic.
Would he have a producer, right? It's like, hey, man, we just can't keep doing these things in Aramaic. Like, I mean, nobody speaks it anymore, dude. Did you call me dude? Well, I mean, you know, yeah. Like real, you know, big dude.
Dude with a capital D.
Dude. Yeah. That's awesome. If Jesus had a podcast.
I like it. It just, yeah. I mean, you never know. I feel like this is, could be our next project.
Yeah. Yeah, this is Jesus with you on this fine Sunday morning. Hey, if you've read the book, you know how the movie ends, right? So let's get to it. Our first caller. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Hi, Jesus. Long time love. First time call.
Yeah. Well, I could ask who this is, but I already know. Yeah.
And it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I already know your question, caller. Oh, man. See, it writes itself.
Oh, I don't really know how to end that.
All right.
This podcast is now over. No.
Yeah, right. Well, life's a journey. It's just good to still be on the journey. You never know where it's going to end, and you know you want it to go a certain way. Obviously, we all have our own personal. I guess we have our own little personal movies we've written in our head, right? And I struggle all the time because I want my movie to stay within the script, and a lot of times it doesn't. It never does. Let's just cut to the chase. But
throw away the script.
Yeah. And I have a hard time with that. But hopefully it'll be interesting regardless. But hopefully I can just enjoy the movie as opposed to try and make it what I want it to be.
Yeah. And don't ask all the questions during it because it's super annoying.
Yeah. Don't talk during the movie. Enjoy it. That's my problem. I talk too much.
Yeah. Obviously. But it's fabulous. And I appreciate you just, you know, hanging out, sharing your heart with us today.
Well, you too. Thank you very much. And been a big fan for years. So it's nice to always, and it's always great to sit down and chat with you. Thank you.
Man, there is just nothing more to say after that 30 minutes with Jason McCoy. Some of my faves. I hope you enjoyed it too. Just wanted to give another quick shout out to our friends at Linden and Oak Coffee in High River, Alberta. You can find them at lindenandoak.ca. Hear their message, their story. And if you're in the High River area, pop by for probably one of the best cups of coffee you'll ever got. Thank you to our podcast partners, Linden and Oak. This has been a Limelight Audio and Media production.